Hello and welcome to another episode of Bankless Africa. Our next guest is a friend, an inspiration, and a passionate advocate for building a borderless world. Yosef Ayele is an entrepreneur, a change maker, and a global bridge builder who has lived in six different countries across four continents. That's a lot of global experience. He also co-founded and led the Edmund Hillary Fellowship and the Global Impact Visa, which is a new immigration program with the New Zealand government. You can listen to his crypto thesis titled A New Narrative in the form of a talk that he did at DevCon Bogota. We will be sure to include that in our show notes as well to be sure that you can be able to access it. Currently, he's focused on building a borderless economy with Web3 with a particular focus on Africa. His big question is, what if Web3 needs Africa and not the other way around? Welcome to Bankless Africa, Yosef.
Thanks, Ms. Purple. Great to be here.
Yeah. Talk us through your journey to being here. You know, I know I gave a bit of an intro, but how did you find yourself being in the belly of the frontier, you know, pushing for Web3 as plan A versus it being plan B?
So I am from Ethiopia. I grew up in Addis, and many people in my generation can relate to this fact that growing up in different African countries, you're basically told that if you want to do great things in the world, you got to leave. And in Ethiopia, the best building that we had when I was growing up was the airport. The best road was the road to the airport. And every little person on the street would sell chewing gum, cigarettes, and diversity visa form to go to the US. And that whole narrative hasn't changed for a long time. But the internet changed my life. I learned so many things online. I learned most of my English online. I learned about the different parts of the world, the opportunities there online. It just opened up so many more opportunities than I thought were possible. But the internet continues to be gated. And so whenever I would come across resources, I would get into the payment page and then voila, sorry, Yosef, you can't access that. And, you know, when I wanted to pursue different educational opportunities overseas, I couldn't pay. So I got a scholarship to study at Harvard, and I couldn't even apply to college because I didn't have a credit card. So I had to borrow a friend's credit card to even submit the application form to access part of the internet that is supposed to be open. And I guess, you know, I followed that path, moved to the US, worked in Silicon Valley in tech, stayed in the Western world, as you said, as an African, having an African passport, the world is still very much gated for you. It's been extremely hard to travel around the world with an Ethiopian passport, and many listeners from Africa can relate to that. Is I have a ton of scars around immigration systems, and both at the application stage or at the airport, and it's quite ridiculous because talent is borderless. We live in an era where information is borderless, but we're constrained within the gated, bordered worlds. And so one thing that I took upon myself was, hey, what about experimenting with immigration systems from within the government apparatus? And the opportunity arose for me to collaborate with the New Zealand government, which is a very small island nation at the edge of the map. And it's got a lot of the same characteristics of Western economies, bigger economies like the US, the UK, and other parts of Europe, but it's much smaller. And they were extremely focused on attracting talent and building a borderless country. And so I said, hey guys, if you want to do that, you need to innovate and experiment with your visa program. And so we designed a whole new visa category from scratch called the Global Impact Visa. And we basically threw all variables that are not indicative of one's success, such as where you're from, your education level, the type of linear career path that you have, your age, and just a lot of the things that do not really matter. And that was an amazing experiment. It was very successful in attracting global talent. We built it as a fellowship program. And for me, it was like, okay, this is V1 of how to innovate and how to create a, you know, borderless society in a borderless world by getting a government to change how it thinks about immigration. Governments have monopoly over their borders. And so if you want to work on that, you got to work with one, right? So that was the Global Impact Visa. And then what I learned through that is even working with the best version of a government infrastructure is going to take more than a lifetime to go one at a time and get them to shift how they think. While on the other side, the world is moving so fast and changing. And I discovered crypto many years ago. And first it was like, this is quite interesting around creating internet money and thinking about, you know, macroeconomic conditions. And I was looking at it primarily from Western world for a bit. But then I think it was 2015, Mark Andreessen wrote an article about how Bitcoin can be transformative for emerging markets, specifically for cross-border payments, small amount transactions, so transactions that are in cents. It was mostly on the payment side, and I read about it, and I was like, wait a minute, this is actually a game changer. If I had this, that would be quite different. When I was growing up in Ethiopia, I could actually transact with the world and not be fully gated. And then I just started going deep into the rabbit hole, and then Ethereum was launched, and followed through everything that was happening. There were so many people from crypto in the fellowship that I created in New Zealand. So I was very fortunate to have a front row seat in terms of the development, as well as kind of foreseeing the next 2-3 years of what was happening in the space. And the more young Africans I started reconnecting with and talking with from Ethiopia, from Kenya and Tanzania, and those are places, by the way, I grew up in, just the more excited and motivated I became about their worldview around being born in a global society, having knowledge and information that everyone else around the world has, but at the same time, because they're born in the country they're born in, that's a liability instead of an asset in this world. And they want a big part of this world like everyone else, but the world continues to be gated. And I saw crypto and Web3 Rails offering that, offering us a borderless economy and a borderless society. It's like, hey, I can be Ethiopian, I can be from Lesotho, but I can participate in a global economy from where I am here. No one should care what I look like, how old I am, where I'm from. I can be judged and given merit for what I'm creating and for the content of my ideas and thoughts. So that's really kind of what led me into the space. And a big part of what I'm doing is, one, bridging different worlds. So I spent a lot of time, you know, globally in the West as well as the East, connecting and embedding myself into the core crypto communities. And they don't really understand Africa. Many places don't fully understand the potential in Africa. And I think many in the crypto world are solving problems that either don't exist or it's a very tough competition, because there's many layers of trust. There are many layers of financial services in Western economies. Yeah, you might not trust the American government and it's printing a lot of money and all of that, but I think it's not enough to get billions of people shifting their day-to-day activities into a whole new environment. So yeah, that's kind of how I got into this space and helping bridge the different worlds.
You know, what you said about not being able to access so many things is true in a very, sometimes it seems ridiculous, but, you know, something as simple as being able to earn working for a global company, PayPal is a whole issue, you know, Stripe is a whole thing. I know I couldn't be able to earn from one of the podcasts I had, a personal podcast, because they only paid through Stripe. So I could not be able to qualify for that, even though for all intents and purposes, I myself qualified outside of the fact that I came from Lesotho. So, you know, it's humbling to be able to see the possibilities. It may not be as necessary for somebody to feel the need to leave their country and go live somewhere else or go participate elsewhere. But, you know, would you still recommend people to try to go the route of leaving their country or their respective homes to maybe go live elsewhere? It could be just simply another African country. Or would you say that now people should mainly just focus on, you know, cementing themselves and trying to participate digitally?
I don't want to tell anyone what to do.
Of course.
All I want to do is be part of the movement that makes as many options available for people being born in Africa, so that they can choose what makes most sense to them, so that global opportunities are not closed off for young Africans, be it physically or be it digitally, right? So it's always nice to have the option and for you to decide to stay home or to go versus being forced to stay or being forced to go.
What can you... or perhaps in your personal opinion, what do you think builders should be focusing on? Something that is more, you know, legitimate and needs more focus at this current moment than other things that are maybe more luxury items or luxury ideas for us to explore. We've obviously seen a lot of innovation facing the remittance issue, but what else do we need to build towards to further secure our place as a continent and as a people within the frontier ecosystem?
So there are different ways of thinking about it. I guess at a first principle level, everything on the blockchain, or I shouldn't say everything, the primary premise of blockchain technologies is that a lot of things are built open source, right? And it's available for everyone. It's permissionless. It's decentralized. It is trustless, and you can benefit from it, you can own it, you can contribute to it. And I believe that this space should be stateless because and cultureless, meaning it shouldn't be embedded in one very specific culture. We can adapt it and build our own culture on top of it. So it's a space that I think Africans should claim and make it their own and use it to solve various types of problems that we have in our immediate communities, in our cities, in our countries, in our regions. And what you do with it, what you build on it, in my view, should be oriented towards solving real problems that matter to people, right? So what you might face in Lesotho might be different from what my cousins face in Ethiopia versus what our friends in Kenya or Nigeria face. Yes, there are some similarities, and I think we can flesh out on some of those. But I think it's more amazing for us to build from the needs that we understand and also what blockchain technologies today and tomorrow are offering us. Keep in mind, this space is being developed, right? So we're not anywhere close to completion. It's still deep in research and development phase. So, to me, it doesn't make sense to move the entire economy of Lesotho, the entire economy of Ethiopia, and put it on chain today because the space cannot support it. But if we know technology, if we understand a number of the curves that are ahead of us, is we can actually start to build around what is coming and around the ability that this space can scale and actually have more Africans contributing to the core protocols, not just at application level. So that's kind of one way I think about it. I know it's quite a generic answer, but I think it's very critical because it's very easy to say, hey, this project worked in California, or this project worked in Russia, or this project worked in Korea. Let's build it for ourselves. Yeah, borrow ideas, borrow lessons, but it's always amazing to kind of start from first principles of what problem am I actually trying to solve? For example, stablecoins. They're very big in our continent, right? A lot of people are using US dollar stablecoins because today they meet an immediate need of Forex shortage. And you know, there's a lot of reasons why we're experiencing huge Forex shortage, but that's limiting people's ability and potential. But that is today. That doesn't mean all types of stablecoins need to be US dollar denominated. We have our own currency issues. 40 out of 54 African countries don't even print their own money in their own countries. We print that money in Europe and we pay 6% of our total money supply as a fee. And you know, we got to deal with money, like physical money disappearing on ships on the way to the delivery. Or we have instances when foreign governments are saying, hey, we won't give you this because we don't align with your political states. Now, that doesn't happen a lot, but it's happened a few times, right? So if you think about stablecoins, what are the potential ways we can build stablecoins for our own immediate economies? It'd be very different from how USDC or UST or other types of stablecoins are built around the world, be it centralized or decentralized. So if we start from first principles around what problems are we solving for and what are the dynamics that we have around us, then the types of products and services we come up with will be quite different from what we see in the West. You know, there's another pattern of trust that we have across multiple African countries is because most countries that were colonized and have come post-colonial era, they've just generally had weaker institutions, recovering from the colonial era or, you know, instability or dictatorship or whatever. But for whatever reason, many countries haven't had hundreds of years of institutional history and consistency to help us build high levels of trust. Financial institutions are kind of new, you know, they're a few decades old. Various types of legal and justice and even sort of day-to-day transportation service industries, there's just a lot of like low trust in general, right? And if you kind of think about how many hours a week you spend making sure something you want to happen will happen as you thought would happen without a whole lot of surprises along the way, and you know, kind of extrapolate that and apply it to whatever area you're working in. So trust is one big area, because so far we've been relying on intermediaries for trust. But if those intermediaries are new or don't have a ton of history or are not stable or not existent, then we've got to solve for trust. And I think that's what, you know, one of the values of blockchain is solving for trust. So maybe that is one area that many African countries have something in common. So maybe that's one area to kind of build around: trust of data, trust of people around your identity, your reputation, your track record, trust of finance and systems. So like, can I lend you money from Ethiopia to Lesotho? And can I do that without knowing who you are, but trusting your reputation and trusting that, you know, you have your reputation at stake and knowing that you're incentivized to pay me back at a certain point? And if we've built that in, you know, aligned way with the right incentives, that allows me to actually do a lot of things with you. So that's one area I think we can start building around. The continent. I mean, there's so many other verticals that I think of, but the main thing I'd say is really understand what are the core needs that you have and understand what blockchain technologies offer and find those matches and start building.
Before I ask the next question, I just have to comment that the concept of money getting lost on ships on its way here feels like this claw of colonialism that is still grabbing on for dear life. It's so disconcerting because you don't think of it. You know, we're so used to money just being digital all the time. You forget about the fact that when it's cash, it's physical. You can't exactly send something physical digitally. It has to be sent physically. So it obviously needs to cross, you know, oceans or fly or whatever. And that's, it's just crazy because it's not something that, you know, we grapple with every other day. But you also mentioned the concept of trust. And I know you spent most of February, I think it was 28 days on what you called a learning trip. And you mentioned in the thread that you did on Twitter that there was quite a bit of a focus on ZK proofs. But outside of just that, can you just give us a, you know, a debrief of that particular trip? I also know that you were there as a steward of sorts with the Ethereum ecosystem community as well, mainly with Jeff Coleman and with Vitalik. So can you just, you know, talk us through what that trip was like?
Yeah. So to give context, in February, a number of us did a trip across four African countries. That included Vitalik Buterin, who is the founder of Ethereum, Aya Miyaguchi, who is the executive director of the Ethereum Foundation, Lira Siri, who is an expert in cybersecurity and has been a core contributor to a number of aspects of Ethereum protocol, as well as Jeff Coleman, who's been a contributor to Ethereum protocol, as well as member of the Ethereum community, and Sungyi Lee, who's a DAO builder and has been bridging Web 2 and Web 3 worlds from Asia and started her journey in Africa, and Vicky as well. So we were traveling across four countries as a way to help bridge some of the Ethereum community members with the real opportunities and needs around Africa. And the trip started because I gave a talk at DEF CON, as you mentioned earlier, saying, hey, we've been talking about crypto and Ethereum being needed to bank the unbanked and help the developing world. But actually, it's you guys who need Africa, because Ethereum has been talking about for years about reaching the next billion users and having real-world cases. Guess what? I don't think the real-world cases and the next billion users is going to come from the Western world. It's primarily going to come where decentralization is really solving real needs that people will utilize on a daily basis as a plan A, regardless of what the market price is, right? It's not to say there's not application in Western worlds, but what I'm saying is the primary need is in African countries. I know Latin American countries and certain Southeast Asian countries have also been utilizing crypto to solve so many types of needs, but I feel more qualified to talk about Africa. So that was my message. And Vitalik was like, this sounds great. How do I get more involved? And my response was, just come connect, meet builders, meet founders, understand the ecosystem, build real relationships. So this was V1 of what will hopefully be multiple bridge building exercises and activities with people within the Ethereum, but as well as the broader Web3 ecosystem. And so we went around, connected with local communities, attended events. It wasn't mostly sharing. It wasn't about sort of Ethereum solving Africa's problems. It was more like, hey, there hasn't been a huge amount of bridge building between these worlds, so let's start that. And I gotta say, like, the Ethereum community has predominantly been missing in action in Africa, and so I felt very motivated to help build that bridge.
I know you obviously have firsthand experience living on the continent, but what did you take from this? You know, because this was a trip that was taken with the intention of listening to the builders and the community members and people who are maybe just curious and just, you know, finding their footing. What were the biggest takeaways from the trip, from the various countries you went to, in terms of, you know, the developments that are being made, what people feel they need the most?
I was so surprised by the number of founders that were trying to figure out the stable coin situation. So that was really interesting to hear and understand different ways people are thinking about future stablecoins for cross-border transactions and payments. You know, one of the most ridiculous things also in our continent is neighboring countries that are doing trade with each other would use US dollars or euro as a settlement layer for our internal trade, right? So I find that quite ridiculous. You know, so that's kind of one of the things that people are like, how do we think about that? A lot of our Nigerian friends were really feeling the currency crunch, not just US dollar, but the Naira crunch, and having to think about new forms of currencies and stable coins around that. So that was really more eye-opening than before of just how bad things had gotten for people to really think about stable coins in a new way. And I'm really excited for more experiments to happen in that space. The other thing is because so much of the world knows Vitalik and who he is, wherever we went, and his name was kind of put out there, many members of either Ethereum or just crypto community who had never connected with each other were coming out. And so it was interesting just how some of these activities were a catalyst for various communities to come out and connect with each other. And so there were some discussions that we're part of, and we're just observing the community figuring out how to connect with each other on an ongoing basis and do stuff together because they just met for the first time. And it's not a bad thing. It's just hasn't happened yet. So, you know, that was really interesting. We met with a bunch of university students and very young builders, and I'm always just extremely impressed by the depth of thought and how, you know, just that generation that is not just internet native and is now becoming crypto native, and how they see the world, thinks and approaches the world, that is extremely interesting from my perspective. Other main takeaways is that there's just a lot more cross-border cooperation and coordination that is happening, and that is also communities are very hungry for across, you know, the African continent. So to me, it made me even more bullish that even though so many communities are still early compared to, you know, other more developed ecosystems around the world, the pace of growth and depth that is happening is just incredible. So it makes me lean even more into the Web3 meets Africa thesis and narrative, which I'm already 100% in, by the way, but it's even more motivation to, you know, keep leaning in if there's anything more to lean in towards.
Now, in the talk that you did at DEF CON, you mentioned what you call the three mountains, right? And these are the three areas that you feel need the most focus. And they are mainly education, especially in a space where, you know, we get a lot of our information on YouTube and Twitter, which is insane. Increasing the amount of founders with access to capital, and also building true community that is authentic and not so much extractive. Do you want to elaborate a bit on that before we get into it, or do you think it's explanatory?
Sure. Happy to break down each of them. So I really care about education because it's a core foundation. Let me kind of break it up actually in smaller pieces. Zooming out, a huge part of the narrative that I keep hearing and coming across the African continent is people get into crypto to trade. And it's kind of seen, hey, I'm a trader. Look at me. I'm buying and selling. And if you come across people during the bull market, it's just everyone is smart. Everyone is making money until the music stops and a bunch of people lose all their money or a huge part of their money. And so that to me is a little frustrating to see. I'm not saying trading is bad. Speculation is just an inherent part of the space, but that being the predominant and sometimes the only narrative and main entry point for many people is doing injustice to them, is doing injustice to the continent and to what is possible with blockchain technologies. Because if we go back to the initial story of, hey, the world needs us because we have a lot of needs and we can build a lot of our solutions on crypto rails in better ways than we can in traditional technology or through development finance or, you know, just the status quo way, then we got to start thinking and understanding the broad spectrum of what the Web3 movement is really about and really understand what does decentralization really mean? What does it mean to build a permissionless space? What does it mean to build trust or create things that are trustless? What are the fundamentals of this entire industry? Understand the values and the principles and then the skills. And then, sure, go trade. But once you start going down the rabbit hole, you engage from a builder, user, creator perspective, as opposed to I'm just putting my money into something someone I don't know has built, and I am putting my destiny in their hands, and I'm just gambling to see something good to happen. Like that, you have zero control over most variables. And so there's just no point. You're just gambling there, right? And I think it's just doing disservice to you. So a big part of what I want to see and what I want to be part of is just more entry points into crypto beyond just the speculative parts of it or beyond the content and education part, which is about how to trade and how to find the right airdrops and so on, to let's actually learn the fundamentals of this space. Let's understand the values of this space. And beyond that, let's actually teach ourselves or build infrastructures for us to learn a set of skill sets so we can work in this space. Let me just give you like one data point of how this can be very transformative. If you look at Ethiopia, we have about 120 million people. Our GDP is about $110 billion. It'll take 23,000 Ethiopians working online, crypto and non-crypto. I think the crypto space is more exciting and interesting. Working online, 23,000 Ethiopians earning $3,000 a month to increase the country's GDP by 1%. Only 23,000. In Zambia, it is 6,250 Zambians to increase the country's GDP by 1%. So to me, this is one of the best ways for young Africans to get work and have an income and contribute and participate in the global economy. So you can use your time to participate as opposed to using the little money that you have gambling. Right. So that's kind of like the education part that I'm really interested in. And I'm on a mission to find as many educators, from content creators to people actually doing skills development training across many African countries, to figure out how to support them and how to find the right resources around the world and link them up with, you know, what's available so that they can accelerate and increase that more. The second vertical is around Web3 builders, people who are building real applications. Either at the application layer or the protocol layer, and providing capital and access to capital and global infrastructures. So it's not just money, but it is also access. Access to various global institutions, access to liquidity, access to exchanges where you can list, or access to NFT platforms, or whatever those are, is providing that pathway. And the third thing around community is, as you know, Ms. Purple, the core currency of the blockchain movement is community. That's such a fundamental part of it. If you travel around the world, if you go to all the ETH events, there's a very strong sense of community that is embedded into everything. And I really want to just see more of that happening. I know there are a lot of global protocols, layer ones, and applications coming to Africa using community as a term for marketing and user acquisition to inflate the global token prices. I think we can do better than that. And I think we can do more to raise more missionaries instead of mercenaries in this space. And that's one area that I'm trying to support. And part of the global bridge building is to really help connect global and local communities, because the sad reality is, like, even at DEF CON or even at ETH Denver, very few Africans could actually go because they happen to be born in an African country. Nothing about them, their character, the content of their ideas and thoughts, or what they've built. And we live in that unfair world, but I think we can help flip that by having more global events happen in Africa where more Africans can participate in it. So that's one of the things that a number of us are pushing for and trying to make happen.
I am 100% for that. I know that we are all for being virtual and living on the net and everything, but there is something to be said about being physically with the group of people, you know, with the community, being able to connect. Like how you said, there were people who were meeting throughout your trip that had never been able to meet before, either because there wasn't really a situation or a point where they felt they could meet, and this was the perfect prime opportunity for that, or simply they're just, you know, you couldn't figure out how to do it to begin with. So I'm all for us having more global events. If I could, I would definitely go to all of them. But, you know, like you said, getting a visa is a hassle. It's a heartbreaking experience as well, all in one. It's just, yeah, it's not exciting, you know. But you know, speaking on the matter of capital, it would be amiss of me not to touch on this in some way or another. But what lessons do you think an African founder, either one who's already been, you know, existing within the space or is just getting started, what can they take from, you know, the recent developments with the Silvergate and SVB situations? I know neither of us are experts as it comes to this, but as it pertains to finance and the like, a lot of funding received by tech and Web3 startups tends to come from institutions such as those two. So what can one do as a founder to try to make sure that I am able to keep building, keep moving forward without feeling like you are at the mercy of an institution that has built all these years and centuries of trust within other communities as well?
Yeah, that was quite the shock. And I guess there are things that very few of us could have fully predicted. But the reminder is that as a founder and as a builder, you're inherently optimistic. You have to be optimistic about the future in order to keep waking up in the morning, slaving away, figuring out solutions to different challenges that come in front of you, and paving a path where it doesn't exist. So as founders, we're kind of oriented to see the best version of the world. But also as stewards of projects and protocols, you always have to think of all the worst things that can happen and do really good risk management on the side. So it's more of just a mindset and a mentality. And I guess what the last few days have taught us is you can't take anything for granted. Nothing can be taken for granted. And now is a founder just going to sit down and think about all the possible things that can go wrong and how to hedge risk? No, you can't. But it's actually moving us to more decentralization. It's saying actually centralized finance has real weaknesses. The way banks are used to lending is ridiculous, right? And that wouldn't happen in crypto. So it kind of makes you think about, you know, different ways of building decentralization. And it's and kind of going back to the earlier point of one of the biggest lessons from the February trip is more African founders have been waking up to the value of decentralization. With the FTX collapse and just so much of the dissolution of centralized bodies that we've seen so far is like, hey, maybe it's not a bad idea to think about decentralization and pay more attention to. So that's one thought piece. Another thought piece for African founders is really like figure out what problem you're trying to solve and stay focused on that. Now, I know it's very generic, but you will be surprised how many people are building solutions that they think is valuable or that tell a good story or makes it easier to fundraise in a certain period of time, as opposed to anchoring what is really a need that people have, that people will pay for on an ongoing basis, and that will have real value accrual to them. And the more successful I am, then the better off my customers will become, and the more services I can offer them, and the more customers can come to me. So I can build something that can stay on either in the current or future incarnations for the next 5, 10, 15 years. It's like that mentality, I think, doesn't exist even in many of the global crypto communities. And I don't think we should just blindly follow what someone else is doing somewhere else. I think we should really focus on what problems are we actually solving, and try to play the long-term game. So if you play the long-term game, you actually are incentivized to add real value and have real users that derive real value from it, right? And just do fewer things and just keep things as simple as possible. I see many African founders who just try to do too many things at once and then they drown or spend too much money too quick. You know, the best teams I've seen are those who, you know, even after raising a ton of money, they're very frugal with that resource. They're not building for the best case version or best case scenarios. They're building for the worst case scenarios, so they never run out of money. Now, you got to be aggressive, you got to invest and all of that, but you also got to survive, right? And so I know many founders who spent a ton of money last year and trying to raise now and are burnt, right? Or it's just a tougher time to fundraise. And so you can't take anything for granted. You can't take banks for granted. You can't take money will keep coming for granted. You can't take, because I've built it and I have hundreds of thousands of people on the wait list, that's going to turn into users. So yeah, just remain humble and stay focused is at least the lesson that I'm taking for myself from this whole experience.
Yeah, I think, you know, the part about taking things for granted is so important, because you're right. A lot of people just assumed, you know, in tech and Web3, all these investors, these VCs, they have money to blow. So you'll see people who've raised a ton of money. 6 months later, there's nothing to show for it. So, yeah, if anything, this is definitely going to, you know, maybe build some certain good habits in people. Hopefully, that's the hope, to say that you need to build thinking that anything could happen. But of course, you know, being optimistic and hopeful that you will be able to succeed, because otherwise you will not be a passionate leader, because you'll always be panicking every few seconds. But you mentioned a bit earlier on that you are very intentional about supporting projects that you feel are, you know, building towards having a borderless economy, mainly for Africans. Are there any projects that you are an advisor or an investor to that you'd like to share with us?
Yeah, so I'm setting up a couple of projects that will be public at some point in the next few months. So watch the space, and you know, they're focused around the themes that I talked about earlier. You know, so far I've just been getting inspired by just people doing the real work that matters. You know, the people who've been around this space for a long time, just slaving away, doing the meetups, building the communities, educating others, keep showing up. Just, you know, hats off, and really, like, that's the type of work that feels thankless, but it's so critical and it's beneficial. It's a public good, and I really hope the ecosystem rewards it and comes back. You know, I'm a fan of people who are doing education and talent development, and like just going at a grassroots level where it really matters, and just doing the work as opposed to trying to build big institutions with lots of fat and middle management and raising a ton of money. I mean, it's nice to get to that phase, but I feel like great things are built from the bottom up. You know, so there are, you know, projects like WebTree Bridge in Nigeria that have been doing tons of community building work there. You know, really hats off to them. A lot of the community members in Kenya that I've met, the Eat Safari group and community, some of the people, Bit KE, who've been writing and educating people in this space. I mean, you guys from Bankless, what you're doing is really amazing. I want to, you know, us figure out like how to get more people listening to your content and providing real education. You go on YouTube, the videos that are getting the most views are people looking at trading charts and helping you figure out how to make quick bucks here and there. You know, again, nothing wrong with that, but I feel like there's much more to the space than that. And I feel like Africans can make a ton more, even financial reward from the space by actually learning and diving deeper into the space. The Afropolitan crew, they're building amazing communities. I mean, there's just, I've got a long list of people who are doing great work. And I think we should wrap around them, support them. And yeah, just, you know, if there are any listeners who are running meetups and small events, just hats off to you. Keep doing that. Because those are the things that will keep reaping a ton of rewards. If you talk to Jeff Coleman, who was on the trip, I think one of his early entry points into crypto was running meetups in Toronto. And then lots of people just kept showing up and became a thing, and Vitalik started showing up, and, you know, a bunch of other people started showing up. And now if you look back, some of the people that started joining those meetups today, you know, they're running so many of the incredible protocols and projects in this space. And I guess, you know, it's probably taken 10 years, 7 years for that to happen. But communities last a long time. And so, yeah, I just want to, you know, give kudos and thumbs up for people who are doing those types of activities, because I think that's really working at the foundation level.
What are you most looking forward to seeing in the next 3 quarters of the year?
In the next 3 quarters of the year, let me see. So we're planning to do more trips with a bunch of other types of builders, layer twos, and projects. So, yeah, we'll just watch the space. There'll be more bridge building activities. Eat Safari is happening in September. I know some people are cooking up ETH Accra. That'd be amazing. And Web3 Lagos is happening as well. So it'd just be amazing to see more events and gatherings happening where I can say, hey, crypto people, come to this. This is one of the best ways to connect with you know, local regional builders and community members. Would just love to see more founders, more builders building applications that are solving local needs. And yeah, I just want to see more of that. I think we can use thousands and thousands more builders, you know, over the next multiple years. So, you know, we can't have thousands of builders in the next 9 months, but, you know, it would be amazing just to see more people get into this space. And, you know, bear markets in some ways are really nice because there's not a ton of noise, right? And so I really want those who are doing the real work to be standing out and shining, and not a ton of noise. So maybe quality content and quality education outshines the rest, and bring back a bunch of users who left because it's a bear market to come actually for the right reasons and the right fundamentals. So those are the things that I'm looking forward to.
I think I agree with you. I used to think that, you know, the statement that bear markets were nice, I used to think it's a thing that one says from a point of privilege. But being here, I see it to be true, because you see it in practice that during a bear, that's when people get more intentional about why it is that they're doing what they're doing, you know, why you're here in the first place. Even if you just happened across it because you saw a cool NFT and you thought that could be cool for me to have, and then later on started learning about things, it forces you to, you know, reconsider everything that you thought you knew, and then perhaps relearn from the beginning as well, because there's time for you to, you know, spend doing all that building and that information collection. But to close off this conversation, I like to ask our guests to give three words that you would use to describe the space as a whole. So you can describe either where we're at right now, how you feel, or maybe where you think we're going. So just three words. It can be three phrases, but try to keep it to three words.
So I'll share what I think specifically, you know, from the African context. One is transcendence. I think it's just about time we transcend things that are not working. Second one is, like, I've become a stronger believer around decentralization. So decentralization is a big theme for me. And third is self-determination. We gotta take sovereignty back and build forward, instead of waiting for others to do it for us.
Yes, I like that a whole lot. I think, you know, the space that we're in, we're seeing the possibilities. For a while, I think maybe some people had given up hope. You know, you started to feel like, you know what, the best thing we can do is just consume what the world gives us and just move on with life. But we're seeing and we're learning that there are still Africans who still have hope, and there are people who are capable, beyond capable, to help transcend us into a new space and a new era. So thank you so much for sharing and for doing what you do and continuing to spread the word, whether it's in, you know, another African country or with other communities like DevCon. I echo your words in your thread to say, when DevCon Africa, I would very much love to see something like that. I think we would see a lot of people that we don't often get to see, because developers tend to be, you know, quite isolated. But yeah, once again, thank you so much. We will include all the links to your thread, to the talk that you did in Bogota, in our show notes as well, so that people can be able to get a hold of that or access it as well. But once again, thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you, Ms. Purple, and thank you everyone from the Bankless team for making this happen. You guys are doing really important work.
All right. And with that, remember that none of what we've shared here is any financial advice. It's all just, you know, opinions and, you know, how we feel and how we perceive certain things. Please always do your own research, which is why we try to add as many links as we possibly can, especially when the space tends to shift so rapidly. Now, remember that nothing is set in stone. There is a world yet to be discovered. But this time, Africa is at the core of the table.